missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
And Brian O'Driscoll is with us this evening. How are you keeping, Brian?
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm very well. Our Mayo correspondent.
Are there not enough of you in the studio already?
Your social media, you've done my county a service over the last few days, showing it off in all its beauty.
Well, it did itself a service. It was absolutely beautiful down there. It's a while since I've been down to Mayo at all, and 15 years since I've been in Ashford Castle, but it is properly beautiful. And what they're lacking in silverware down there, they make up for in hospitality.
That was uncalled for, Brian. That was absolutely... I hope you're not still there. You'll be thrown out straight away. I hope you had time to watch some of the rugby then last weekend. Obviously, we're almost at this weekend. We'll chat about what's going to happen with Leinster Ulster on Saturday and Munster against Connacht on Sunday. But before we get to that, let's look back. And well, firstly, it was great to have it back. I know the Gallagher Premiership is back and you've been watching a bit about that. It just felt slightly different at the Aviva Stadium. The sun was shining and it was a real buzz and excitement, and probably a better standard than we might have expected first day back?
Yeah, I think there was a very strong standard. We've probably come to expect it from Leinster in particular, but Munster have had a reasonably good season. They've obviously made a couple of great signings, and there's clearly going to be a huge enthusiasm from all players, having had an unexpected 5-month sabbatical from the game. But I don't think it disappointed, as Derby games go. There's always a nice little bit of spice, and to have it first up in what feels like a new season, even though it's the rollover from last year. I thought it was a very entertaining game. Of course, you're going to have some uncharacteristic handling errors, particularly as the second half went on. But for the most part, great game. And it went right down to the wire, as so many of those Interpro games do.
Very difficult for the coaches, with all the various regulations, to even get proper practice games in pre-season. So even talking about it as, all right, old season but new season, for a lot of these players, it'll be the first time they're getting those big collisions. How long generally would it take you after a regular preseason to feel, you know what, I'm at it, I feel 100% comfortable right now?
4 or 5 games, probably.
Right.
It's a different time now. The game has moved on so much, and the intensity of games is so much higher, and the collisions that these players are taking are so much more ferocious, even in the Pro 14, even in the domestic league, compared to 10 years ago. But to really hit my straps, it used to take 4 or 5 games until I felt that I was fully match fit and that the body was hardened. There's less contact at training these days, all the more so for Munster. They obviously missed that week or those few days with the positive test in the academy, so they couldn't have some of the contact sessions that they would have liked. But it certainly didn't show at the weekend. They came out with plenty of intent as to how they were going to play their game, bringing that brute force, bringing their size into play, particularly in the centre, but then mixing up the brutality up front with some silky passing as well. So it's a really difficult one. I think players these days seem to hit form much sooner, because the realization is that if they don't get going from the off, that there is someone there to replace them, and someone can come in and do a job seamlessly. And in the better teams, that's very much the case, that the strength and depth is so good that you have to take your opportunity when you're given the jersey.
Yeah, and the strength and conditioning has come on so much as well over the last few years, and the statistics they have on the players. It's still a difficult few weeks, I'd imagine, for the coaches, because we are at the time of the season when the silverware is going to be handed out, while you're also trying to mix and match and make sure players are getting enough rest and things like that, particularly from a Leinster point of view, when, OK, they have the game against Ulster, maybe this is the one week where they can change things around, but they're heading back into a Pro 14 semi-final. They've got Saracens coming quickly on the horizon. Do you think that Leo Cullen will be able to settle on a bona fide a first 15 for this sort of 5-6 week period? Or is there going to be a constant mixing and matching just to make sure you've got enough fit players on the pitch at the right time?
Well, Leo Cullen knows who his best 15 is, say for maybe one or two positions, and that can be that over the course of the last year or two, that's been down to a little bit of form, but down to injuries as well. But their ability to fit, you know, bodies into positions that, you know, seasoned internationals have been holding on to for a long period of time is quite amazing. Some of the young academy players have been incredibly impressed with coming through, and you see the assembly line of them, the likes of Ryan Baird at the weekend coming in and doing, you know, a pretty impressive job. Yeah, I think it bodes really well. But yeah, it's a very exciting time, not only to see Irish rugby, but see the caliber of some of these younger players coming through. They're very competitive at 20s level. And the fact that we're sharing our academies amongst the provincial teams is obviously a good thing from an Irish perspective, sometimes a bit of a difficult thing to stomach from a Leinster perspective. But the overall picture is about developing the international game, because that's where the money is.
Mm. Unfortunately, the most long-lasting effect from all the quality rugby last week was the injury to Orji Snyman. Mm. Disastrous for the player. 6 to 9 months probably minimum at this stage, but also really disastrous, I guess, for Munster and the morale around the club, and the real buzz that was there this time last week of the two South Africans coming in, going to elevate them to a whole other level, and then you just got to restart again. And it just feels that way from Johan van Graan, coming so quickly after the news of Joey Carberry, that it's one step forward, two steps back constantly for Munster at the moment. And morale wise in the group, that must be just so disheartening.
Yeah, it really must be. I will be absolutely honest to say that you know, my sympathies for Munster over the course of the last 15 or 20 years have been somewhat limited. But when I saw that news on Tuesday, was it, when it was announced, I really felt for club and player. From the club's perspective, they're having a rotten run of luck with key players. Obviously, the likes of Joey is a vital cog in their wheel if they're going to, you know, compete at both domestic and more so European level. I think they'll be in the mix domestically year on year. They'll be set perennial semi-finalists, potentially finalists, and they can win the competition. But from a European point of view, I think you've got to have your X-factor players, your top you know, key performers playing at a consistent level and free of injury. And unfortunately, you know, first of all, Carberry, that indefinite period of time, he's going to be out. And now secondly, with Snyman, he is a brute of a man. And what's even more difficult is from his perspective, is he's come over, he's, I'm sure, on a substantial salary. And all you want to do is show and earn the respect of your teammates, show your quality and show that the big price tag on your head is worthwhile. And to only get 6 or 7 minutes, and for it to happen in a pretty kind of abstract way, it makes it all the more difficult for Snyman to take it. It's going to be a long period of time, you know, for him to rehab that.
Yeah, you mentioned Joey Carberry, and obviously that following on from Tyler Blaendall as well. It means that JJ Hanrahan is very much the man for the foreseeable future now for Munster at 10. His performance last weekend, listening to Liam Tolan last night, you know, rave reviews, quick ball, doing the right things at the right time when things were going well for Munster, but maybe still some question marks about managing the game when things aren't going well for them. What did you make of his performance last week, and do you feel he's ready for that extended spell in that out half position?
Yeah, well, the reality is they don't have a choice in that matter. But I think he's absolutely a very worthy backup number 10. And, you know, on his day, he should be challenging Joey Carberry for the number 10 jersey. There's always been question marks about JJ's consistency of performance and big moments. Talk about that drop goal against Racing earlier in the year. I think it's a little bit harsh talking about the misconversion. It was 5 from the touchline. It looked as though it shaved the post from the angle that I saw. So there wasn't a whole lot in it. But I thought, you know, he had a big say in getting the team back from 24-15 down. The timing of his pass, I think, is something that you only see in a true footballer, of understanding when to suck the defender in and when they have when you have them committed to then throw the pass but not give the ball man and ball. And I think he got that right on a couple of occasions. There was one time then the left touchline when he pulled in Gary Ringrose, who's a terrifically good drift defender, but he committed him. And if Keith Earls had given the ball to Peter O'Mahony, there could have been a score before the second Conway try. In the end, it led up to that Conway try. And again, the ability to commit Jevson Gibson Park when he was drifting and trying to defend two wide players, but understanding the timing to give that pass when he had him committed and let the ball do the work is a skill in itself. And I think a lot of people looking at home take that for granted, but not every player has that capability of understanding when the work is done and to give the pass. Ryan Baird almost overplayed his hand in the James Lowe try where he tried to throw that dummy, and then on another day that pass could have been ruled forward. Whereas JJ, it just looks very easy to him, and as I said, he's a real footballer. I think similar to Johnny Sexton, they just see the game unfolding and have time on the ball. And I'm a fan of JJ. I just hope that he can get a run of games and get his confidence levels up, because Munster will need him.
Yeah, by the sounds of what you're saying, it is just that. It is just a confidence thing. It sounds like you feel he does have the skill set to go, and like, God knows when Joey Carberry is going to be back. That actually, if they need him for the next year, for the rest of this season, that if he can get this run of games and things go right and his confidence is up, that it's as much a mental thing as a skills issue.
Yeah, I think what the Munster fan base have to appreciate as well, they've got to forget Ron O'Gara. JJ Hanrahan and Joey Carberry are not Ron O'Gara. They're not the same type of player. I would never categorize Raj as a kicking number 10, but he had the ball on a string. Neither of those players have those kicking capabilities. I think they could practice their 10,000 hours and they mightn't get to the standard that Raj had in that. So they have to have an ability to play to their skill set. And that's a running game and a game of playing heads up, rather than nudging the ball in behind teams and using a monster pack to beat the opposition up. And on that note, Munster don't have the same pack that played in front of Raj. So you've got to have a flexibility and a variability to your game depending on who your key playmakers are. And I think you've got to play to the strengths of the personnel that are there. And JJ's strength is his running game, his passing game. He'll constantly need to hone his kicking game. Off the tee, he was very good other than that one miss. So I think there was lots of good things to pick from his performance. And as I said, was it a one or 2 point game in the end? And
2 points,
they could have snatched it at the death. So for a first outing, considering this mounted pressure on him with Joey's continued absence, I think it was a pretty solid first performance of the second part of the season.
That's probably a real external thing as well, the Raj comparisons, because everything has changed in Munster since Raj left and since that great team went. That he has a coach now who's also not looking for Raj. He has a coach who wants him to play that running style that either himself or Joey Carberry can play. So you'd have to trust, with all the time they've had together over the past few months, that he's going to be given that confidence within, because they, as you said, have no other option, and he has a coach who's playing to his strengths. So in some ways, he's no excuses now. This is the chance. He's got to grab them with both hands.
Well, if I was choosing a backs coach, to fit my game, if I was Joey or if I was JJ Hanrahan, I think you wouldn't look too far from Stephen Larkham. Was he a kicking 10? Other than that drop goal in the semi-final in the World Cup, I can't ever remember kicking the ball. Matt Burke used to kick to touch. So he was a footballing number 10, and you can see the Larkham mark on that Munster backline. I think they're a work in progress. I think, I was impressed to see the subtlety and the bludgeon of Farrell, his ability to use his soft hands, but also footwork late at the line to get over the advantage line, nearly scored a try himself. D'Alande nearly scored before Conway's first one. So I think there looks like there's nice balance at the 10, 12, 13, provided, they can get quick rook ball into that, pretty lethal set of wingers. And I haven't seen enough of Shane Daly to fully understand what sort of player he's going to be. I think he got caught out once or twice positionally. I think, Johnny Sexton could have manipulated or did manipulate the defense in a way where the wingers were playing high and Daly at fullback wasn't able to cover the space. And with another bounce of the ball, you know, Dave Kearney could have had a try, could have been a different circumstance when Conway was going back to cover that chip over the top in the second half. So you've got to, positionally, you've got to be brilliant when you're playing against one of the masters of manipulating defenses.
Any initial thoughts on that Diolande Farrell partnership in the center?
Yeah, like Diolande's, from what I understand, he came over injured, and so he's probably been playing a little bit of catch up. Anytime you're into a new environment, it takes time to get your timing of run, timing of pass, and just I kind of watched him for a few minutes, just him and understanding his movement. And there's an uncertainty at the moment as to where he's meant to be. There's new plays, there's new styles. So what you tend to do, particularly in the early parts of the season, is you don't want to be too late for plays. And a lot of the time you're there too early. And he still almost managed to, turn bad ball or poor runs into positive outcomes. So it's certainly a good marker that he's laid down. Physically he looks in good condition. He looks as though he's got a nice edge that will suit the Munster team and he'll certainly get the supporters on side. When we do get crowds back down to Thomond Park, but it's hard to know on the balance of one game what the partnership of Farrell and Diolande will be like, but on their individual performance, I was impressed with both of them, and I think we can expect some fireworks from them when they get a few more games under their belt.
No real questions about Johnny Sexton's performance. We should have expected this when we saw the photographs coming from pre-season. He is beefed up and he was ready for this, and you could see he was ready for the scrap as well throughout the game. We saw Easton Aseba last week talking about Johnny playing into his 40s. Are we mad to think like that? To think that he can go and play another 6-7 years?
Well, do you know what? I know that he's not thinking year by year at this stage. I think he absolutely feels as though he can get to the next World Cup. And that's only 3 years away. I think that is absolutely achievable. I met him during lockdown and he looked in the best physical condition I've ever seen him. Mentally, he's as hungry as ever. He's one player who doesn't have other focuses. He doesn't take his eye off the ball. It's literally, he's 100% invested in what he does now. He's not thinking about what retirement might look like. He is just thinking about how many medals he can accumulate over the next number of years and whether he can get to that holy grail of at least a World Cup semi-final with Ireland. And particularly looking at the out-half situation right now, and okay, Jack Carty played well at the weekend. We need to see more of that from him. But there does seem like a substantial gulf between a Johnny Sexton that's playing well and all the other 10s that are available at the moment playing well too. Billy Burns, you won't know how he's going to feature internationally until he gets his opportunity. He's a nice player, but I don't think he plays on the line like JJ does or like Johnny Sexton does or even like Jack Carty does. But I think he's a vital player to Ireland still for a number of years, considering Joey Carberry's predicament.
Can you protect him for the next few years? And would he be accepting of being protected? So do you make a plan for the next 3 years? And maybe these conversations are happening where you sit down and go, you're going to play 15 games a year for club and country, Johnny, and that's the end of it. You just get the sense he wants to be out there week in, week out. He just loves playing the game, and that may not actually work with this aim of getting him to 3 years' time in another World Cup.
Yeah, I think he will have to be minded. And yes, he is a player that wants to play often and regularly. But you have to weigh up the considerations of little niggles that he'd be carrying over the course of the next number of months. He probably is in good shape right now, has had an opportunity to work out all those deficiencies, little shoulder injuries, little flexibility issues. To be able to get himself back as close to 100% as he possibly can. But I think, looking looking at, I heard Keith Wood talking earlier on in the week about how he wished Johnny Sexton would change his tackle technique. And that is the most wishful thinking I've ever heard from Woody, because there is no way at this stage that Johnny Sexton is going to change anything, change body position, change height of tackle, change his head movement. He's 35 years of age. He's done it professionally for over a dozen years. Mm. He is not changing at this point. And I think he prides himself probably the most on the physical part of his game and taking on the likes of CJ Stander as much as he can and holding up Farrell. And you could hear the whoops from, you know, his vital held up tackle where that led to the James Lowe try. So those moments are what inspires him and inspires other teammates. You don't tend to see it that often in a number 10 where they're a real aggressor in your backline defense. Whereas that's definitely Johnny Sexton's game. Will he have the occasional head collision as a result of it? He will, but he's not changing at this stage. He's not going to become a chop tackler all of a sudden, you know, for self-preservation. He doesn't really do self-preservation, and that's why he's been such a winner for so many years.
But when you think back 10, 12 years ago and you're playing with him in that Leinster side and he's tackling like that, at that stage, were people trying to change his tackle technique? You have these big moments, but also, as you say, the risk of injury is sizable. Like, have people tried over the years to change that?
So he's the most stubborn man I know. You know, Johnny famously said to me, 75% of the time I'm right, and the other 25% I'll tell people that I'm right. So, you know, there's no getting away from the fact that he very much believes in himself, in his ability, and of course he's changed and modified parts of his game previously, but with regard to tackling, I think he feels most confident in that upright position. He's got phenomenal, for a guy with a tiny pigeon chest, he's got phenomenal upper body strength, and we saw that against the likes of Chris Farrell. How many times has he held up big number 12s or big number 13s at international level? He's a really terrific defender, and you don't want to take that away from his game as well, because you tell someone to defend differently or stay out of tackles, it might have a negative impact on the rest of his game. That is what he thrives on, and that's what he stands by. And particularly as captain and as a leader, he wants to lead from the front physically as much as anybody.
Mm. That chest is twice the size it now than it was pre-lockdown.
The arms
are twice the size. Everything else has stayed as it was.
Yeah, it's still like a tiny little David Beckham chest. it's a freakish proportions that he's living with now at the moment. His arms are, he's obviously on the same weights program as Bundiaki, but on the same chest program as, I don't know, Jameson Gibson Park. I'm doing him a disservice there, probably. I bet he's an animal in the
gym. I think most of them are at this stage. You touched on Damian De Alanda in very early stages. One thing I was wondering, and maybe it is too early to have noticed this, all these coaches have had a lot of time off and a lot of time at home in front of the computer doing analysis, I'm sure educating themselves more and more, watching various different styles of rugby. The Leinster Munster you saw last weekend, could you see they were trying different things to pre-lockdown, that actually all that time and all that extra brain power that the coaches have been able to accumulate has been reflected out in the pitch?
The only thing about planning in advance of playing an opposition that you've played 5 months ago is that you don't know if they're going to be defending the same way as they were previously. And actually, you know, Leinster were really flying off the line. They feel as though their scramble is good enough to get out to the extremities if a team is good enough to get the ball past their line speed. And it's funny because I almost think that Munster showed the type of game necessitated towards beating Leinster. I think particularly off slow ball, you need the first 5-6 defenders shoot off the line. And I think if you're capable of regenerating quick ruck ball off that really slow ball, the reset time for them to backpedal and get their defensive spacings might actually catch them out. So another time, JJ Hanrahan, Conan was third defender, who ideally is on first receiver. Conan shot up on the outside of JJ Hanrahan, and he stepped back inside, and Van der Fleer managed to pick him up. But if you're dealing with a Cian Healy or a Kelleher who's just come out of a scrum, who's fatigued. You know, they have always been a tiny bit susceptible to there. So they weren't, it wasn't perfection, but I did see a number of impressive new launch plays from all four provinces, actually. And that's where you're able to put an awful lot of time and effort in identifying the way the opposition have defended previously in the hope that they're trying to defend, continue to defend that way. But
is that the bit that excites players as well when you're coming back in?
From a back's point of view, for sure. I'm sure there's the equivalent in lineouts as well that, you know, we're not privy to. Even, you know, Munster had one or two. The one that Farrell was held up on by Sexton, it was a really nice peel, and Murray right out into the midfield where Farrell came charging. I presume they've got an option of going out the back as well if those defenders sit down. So I was impressed with, you know, there was a launch play by Leinster midfield scrum right down the 22 where they all stacked very close to the scrum, and Luke McGrath got turned over or got tackled by Conor Murray, so we didn't see it come to fruition. But I thought Connacht, some of their launch play was really good, their angles of running excellent as well, very clear idea as to how they want to play the game. So I think there was some really good things, and certainly from a back's perspective, pretty exciting viewing.
We have, as usual, neglected both Connacht and Ulster in this conversation. So Ulster at the Aviva playing Leinster on Saturday evening, Connacht up against Munster. Munster need to win that game just to guarantee that they go up against Leinster in the semi-final. The Ulster, obviously, the main standout point from an Irish point of view was Jacob Stockdale at full-back. I think it's just his sixth time starting at full-back for Ulster. Is he a legitimate option at full-back for Ireland?
Yeah, I think he is. I think what you want to do with, first of all, he's become a very important player within a couple of seasons in Ulster. And what you want to do with that, you want to put them in the most prominent positions you can. And you think about the spine of the team being, you know, 2, 5, 8, 9, 10 and 15. So you want to get key contributors into those positions. You want to get the ball in their hands as often as you possibly can. And when you look at Jacob Stockdale and you see him one-on-one, you expect him to beat the defender. Mm. We've come to expect that in a short period of time. So, you know, rather than wait for the ball to get to him on the wing, he's going to get an awful lot more touches playing in the number 15 jersey. I think we saw them using him to great effect with the exit play as well, with, you know, that rocket of a left foot as well. Very educated. You know, sometimes I wish he carried a little bit more aggressively when he knows he's being tackled. I think he doesn't sometimes realize that the punch that he can pack, and his ability to be able to break through, you know, collisions and get the ball away in contact. Maybe that'll come in time. I think his confidence probably took a little bit of a dent in the World Cup, and it'll take a while for him to grow back into the player he knows he is and can become again. But I thought, you know, pretty solid performance for him at 15. I do love having a left foot, right foot option for exits, but also having someone willing to come in at first receiver when you're 10 is organizing some other play, or whether there's a midfield ruck, to just have a go and try and bring players in, playing off the cuff and look for that 50-50 pass or that offload that you know will break defences.
Yeah, he does seem like a smart guy as well. I know he was on with Joe during the lockdown talking about going down to his local rugby club every single day, practising his kicking, because he'd watched every single match he had played over the last couple of years and had picked out just a couple of little bits of info that he wanted to work on. So he's clearly not afraid of the hard work. And as you say, it does make sense in any sport, I guess, getting your most talented players in possession of the ball more often than not. Like, that is, again, you talk about the gap after Sexton. That full back role is still wide open heading into the winter.
I think, and one other point on that, I think it's totally open. And whether it was Andy Farrell that requested with Dan McFarlane and Dwayne Peel to play him in the 15 jersey a little bit more, we'll have to wait and hear. But I think it's very open. And certainly what we did see in the Aviva Stadium on Saturday is that Jordan Larmour, as exciting a player he is, he's not someone that dominates the skies. And, you know, for a guy who's on a similar stature, a similar size, is significantly better in the air is Andrew Conway. And that's simply been down to years and years of practice and getting his timing and catching the ball at the top of the apex, where you feel as though Larmour is still a little bit tentative of getting into that space. Think back to Rob Kearney's great days of plucking balls from the sky. He always owned the space. You never doubted for a second. There was no tentativeness going in to try and claim those balls. There was no fear factor involved. And I'm not saying there is with Larmour, but he just doesn't look as though he's as forthright going into that aerial space to own it, to give confidence and give, you know, set out a tone for the rest of the game that, you know, if you're going to put bombs up on me, I'm going to claim them. I'm going to pick them with perfect timing and complete commitment. I do think that, you know, internationally, that you run the risk of getting more aerial threats when playing a smaller fullback. If I saw Jacob Stockdale in the backfield, I'd be less inclined, if I ran out of ideas, to put a bomb up in the air, because I would feel that there's a strong likelihood that he's going to get in there and own that space. Mm. So maybe I wouldn't quite think that of Jordan Larmour, because he hasn't given me reason not to think it yet.
All right, Brian, great stuff as always.
Cheers, Nathan. Good to chat.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Just go there. Up Mayo, exactly. If you missed that, you can listen back on otbsports.com or just download the app. It'll be up there very shortly. Just on the football, Bohemians beaten on penalties 4-2 in Hungary, while it's 1-1 in Shamrock Rovers game in Tallaght Stadium. Greg Burke with the goal there. Lots more to come on that on the football show from 9.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.